Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
J, but I can't.
Me?
Yeah.
Gene,
that's right. Thanks, Gene. Welcome. And everybody else, too? Peggy? It's not worth mentioning Peggy, but I was just thinking, because she comes so often, but I do hope for this Zen Center that we are, that we continue to be a big tent kind of organization where people of all stripes can come in, no matter what your background. Peggy, for instance, is a very senior teacher in the Thich Nhat Hanh tradition, but comes here on Sundays just to sit with us. And Dennis just came for the first time today. Done some Vipassana. I hope you feel free to just come in and drop in now and then. You know? We're a community, to be sure, but we're also open to people just coming in and calming down and then going back out. I want to be that kind of place where people can do that kind of thing. Yeah, it's important to me. So, and at the same time, today's talk is going to be about what it is, what I feel is a benefit of practice, a lot of long-term practice, of sticking with this for months and years. And there are numbers of benefits that I could go into, I think, but one way to put it that I find myself using more often than not is getting larger. It sometimes seems like this practice is about getting smaller. And because we come here and we sit still and we use words like disappear, no self. Lose yourself. Stop thinking. Leave your world behind. So, and to be sure, part of our practice is losing yourself, is having this experience of dropping everything. But we don't do this practice. It's important not to get stuck there. We don't do this practice in order to hide from the world in a permanent way. We come here and then we go back to the world. And we do that in order to learn something about ourselves and to become more wise and truly helpful when we go back to our lives. I think over time this practice enlarges our view of ourselves. And that's an important step. We get to know another aspect of ourselves that's usually hidden, that part that is silent. And in order to find that place, we have to lose our everyday self. But over time, that also becomes part of ourselves that we walk around with. And in that way, we become larger. We have that aspect as well. We know it. So we know ourselves not just Elizabeth and Wes and Jim, but as also no self, as Buddha as well, and that we, that's a way in which we, our identity enlarges, or becomes larger. I really do feel like, and I use this term, becoming larger, because that's the way it feels to me. I think I can trace a lineage in the doctrine of Zen as well, but it feels to me as if I've become larger, my identity has become larger as a result of this practice. It was strange when I first entered the monastery in Mount Baldy Zen Center when I was 25, to get to know this other self, this other part. Coming back to the world, it was weird. I remember having breakfast with an ex-girlfriend and just feeling weird. Like I didn't know who I was. I mean, I was younger then too. But I just felt like a little like I'd lost my moorings. I was the same person, but I wasn't. And I didn't really know how to explain all of that. There were also times when I was in my first couple of years there where I just didn't want retreats to end, partly because I wasn't sure how I was going to negotiate getting back into life. I didn't want to do the chit-chat thing that always happened after one of these retreats, the big party. On Wednesday evening, we looked at we're reading, what's the name of that book?
Hidden Land.
Hidden Land, thank you. Bunch of, which is long stories from about women in the Buddhist tradition. And we read number 14. Koan, which is a weird one, strange one, where there's a woman sitting right next to the Buddha who would get stuck in samadhi. And Manjushri asks, Manjushri, who is the Buddha's, you could say right-hand man, asks, why does she get to sit there next to you? Because everybody else leaves and she's still sitting there. And the Buddha says, well, just wake her up and ask her. And Manjushri tries to wake her up. And Manjushri, the great bodhisattva of wisdom, who is, you know, the top bodhisattva, cannot do it, tries everything. And so the Buddha says, yeah, a Buddha knew that wasn't going to work. He says, yeah, there's somebody way down below in 100 million levels below at the bottom. That they translate as the bodhisattva of delusive wisdom, that can help her snap out of this. And he comes up, bows to the Buddha, snaps his fingers, she's out. She wakes right up. He took that, and in the verse, which wasn't in our book, you know, it, as Wes said, it's, that's seen as a lowly bodhisattva, but also somebody who's down in the world. It takes somebody from down in the world, from the world of delusion, the world of multiplicity, to come up and wake her up. He represents for me the wisdom of the everyday world and the wisdom of the world of the self. We have to go back to that self. We have to learn over and over again to come back to that self. And it may feel a little bit rocky at first, but we have to learn to do that over and over and over and over again. I admire this woman for getting stuck, by the way. I think it's there's value in getting stuck in samadhi, to doing it that seriously, that things get weird. We do this practice in a controlled way, especially when we do a retreat, so that we can get stuck, so that we can really enter into this different, into a different world, and feel, start to feel comfortable in that world, the world that we call no self. To cut the tether between us and our everyday lives. Thankfully, this woman was sitting right next to the Buddha. And so he knew what to do, how to get her back, how to get her back into her everyday life. I think in this practice, you and I have a chance to discover another aspect of ourselves, to get to know it, to feel comfortable with it, and then to come back. And these are the two worlds that are often talked about in Buddhism. The world of equality, we mentioned that in our dedication, where we say, you know, it's when we dedicate this to the wisdom of equality, and the world of differentiation. And the world of equality is where we see the world through the eyes of no self, where everything is equal, where things don't have the values that we usually put on them. That's a weird place, you know, but where spiders aren't icky and puppies aren't cute, they just are. Where that person isn't a bad person and this person isn't a good person. We can't live in that world, but to experience it is important. It gives us a different view of the world. And then we come back to the world of differentiation, where things are usual, where we make the necessary judgments about the world so that we can navigate it. And we can experience, we have the capability as human beings to experience both of these worlds. And I think to the extent that we can integrate the two, we become larger. And that leads us to become larger in another way. Having both these aspects within us allows us to understand the way ourselves and the way we work more of the time, to see the totality of ourselves, of our human self, with our faults and our strengths. And that's because this no-self aspect of ourselves views everything, including myself, without judgment, with a cool eye of equanimity. So, you know, when things go right for me, I also know more intuitively that there is a larger context to my life. I'm not just Mr. Right. As Dogen says, when we're in spring, we enjoy the spring with knowing that the whole year exists. And we don't have to hold on to the spring. Or as he says, make a nest in the spring garden. When the fall comes, we don't, he says, darken with the colors of autumn, because we know that down deep fall is a part of the whole. Equanimity tells us that. We can feel that intuitively. When things are falling or going wrong, we know the context of the whole. And Dogen calls this aspect, and he points to it and says, feel this. He calls it the vast heart. The vast heart-mind view. And I think that through this practice, our mind can broaden in that way, to take in more of our experience, to include more. That is also a way that we become larger, I think. I sometimes use the example of, you know, some years ago when my kids were smaller and I finally signed up for something at the school, the primary school, to help count the kids as they came out and ran around a track. It was the first time that I'd done anything for volunteered for the school, and I did a great job of it for a little while. And then I forgot one day. I was just got too busy, and I forgot. The school's right across the street from my house. I just forgot to go, and that was a hassle. You know, I knew that. that meant all the kids came out and there was nobody there because the teacher was relying on parent help. And I wrote an email saying, oh, I'm so sorry, it's never happened again. 3 weeks later, I was getting ready for a retreat. I was just going to go to this retreat. Everything was busy. I looked up at the clock. I was supposed to be there at 12. It was 12:10. And I just wanted to be in a different person's body, hear the great Zen monk. You know? This is not me. This is not me. Yeah, it is. And there was a signal moment there where I just realized fully, yeah, that's me. You know, I'm that screw up. And that in that moment, I grew larger. That also is me. In a retreat, sometimes we can see, you know, we feel, we hear the rain. That is me. Nothing else but me. When you see a tree, tree is myself. And here, that also is myself. And I think this practice sets us up for that. Sets us up for that moment when we realize, okay, that too is myself. And I am also, the person who remembers at the right time. I think becoming larger in this way allows us to be a little more settled and to act in a little more settled way, a little more compassionate way to ourselves and to others. And to address our failings, I do have them, to be sure, constructively rather than with crazy knee-jerk judgment. To mark our strengths without being conceited or vain, and to see others more broadly, to understand that they have strengths and weaknesses too. I think that when acting in the world, it makes it a little easier, this larger feeling, to walk into situations that may be difficult, to enter situations that may be difficult, rather than to avoid them. To meet, to talk to a coworker we dislike, or to have an awkward conversation with a family member. I think when we're larger, we have more options for acting. I think when we're overwhelmed by fear or depression or insecurity, and that is all we are, then our options tend to narrow. But when we can find more equanimity, our view and our options widen. In this path, in this Zen path, I like about the Zen path. There's something that I don't like so much about it, but that we celebrate the world of differentiation. That very story tells you that. We celebrate that bodhisattva from way down there. With all of its difficulties and disagreements and loves and cares. We're not a way of quietism. And at the same time, we point out that there is another world that is worth getting to know, because it will help us in our world. It'll give us a wider perspective, and I believe it'll make us larger.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.